live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I mean, it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
That was a line drive off the top of the wall.
There it is! Pete Alonso fires the bat up. He's your Home Run Derby champion of 2019.
I never thought I would get booed during a home run derby, so that was a little different. But I guess I understand going against a hometown guy, and I just wanted to put on the best show I possibly could for the fans here. I mean, the environment was electric, and I don't know. This is awesome. It's unexplainable.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Let's get right to it. Home Run Derby was last night, and boy, did it not disappoint. Vlad Guerrero Jr. had himself a coming out party. 29 home runs in the first round. 29. There's some guys who've competed in the home run derby like three or four times. I've never hit 29 total. He gets 29 in the first round. Then he gets 29 in the second round. But falls just short of winning the whole thing, as Pete Alonso of the New York Mets topped Vlad Guerrero Jr. of the Blue Jays, the famed son of Hall of Famer Vlad Guerrero. Alonso became the third rookie ever to win the Home Run Derby, joining Aaron Judge of the Yankees in 2017. And here's a blast from the past. Cody, this is before your time. Wally Joyner of the Angels, who was a co-champion back in 1986. Alonso won the home run derby last night with just the third highest home run total of the night. Let that wash over you for a second. He had the third most home runs of the night. And because they go into the bracket format is why he was able to pull off the win. He took home the $1 million prize. That's the largest prize in Home Run Derby history. And I do believe, Cody, can we just go ahead and make the announcement now? Can we just go ahead and reach out to Alonzo's representation? Because obviously, Alonzo got the RP3 and Company bump yesterday. Right? I mean... It's our credit. I'm not saying me. It's both.
I will
of ours.
Say this, but between the two of us, the winner I picked and the winner that you picked, Ray, combined to form the finals of last night's.
That's correct.
Home Run Derby. You had picked one Pete Alonso to win. I picked Vlad Guerrero Jr. They were in the finals. So, first time ever, RP3 and Company was sort of right and then actually right.
That's why I said RP3 and Company.
So well done to us.
Now see, what was crazy about this is that the guy from the Dodgers.
Jock?
Right. He had a monstrous performance as well, but didn't get to the finals. did get to the finals. So, Vlad Guerrero,
I missed, before you dive seriously into this, I missed something last night that I feel like it's necessary to play now, and it just made me a little sad that it wasn't a thing.
Back, 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 way back, way back, way back, yikes, 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 way back up, way back, 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 moonshots, fog, back, 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 back
I know we'll do a side note here. I know people like to bang on.
Now, as annoying as it can be.
But
Chris Berman, I mean, he's
he helped put ESPN on the map. Okay?
Right. That's not even the argument I'm trying to make. I just love that. Back.
And I love his calls. I do not care if you find them annoying or that they're all filled with cliches. I love them. It's part
shots.
I just love the enthusiasm on the call. And
it's on its way to Yuma.
The four-letter network was a lot better when it had him on multiple broadcasts. But, yes, I love him on the home run derby. Because every home run, it did not matter.
It was the same
level of enthusiasm. He was bringing it every time, which was
right
great.
Over the right field porch or whether it was out of the stadium.
Yes.
It is the farthest home run he's ever seen.
Through three rounds, including a marathon second round against Jock Peterson that went to three tiebreakers, Vlad Guerrero Jr. hit 91 home runs in a home run derby. Along the way, he set a single-round record with 29 home runs in the first and second rounds, and then Peterson tied that mark in the second round to force the tiebreaker. My boy, Ronald Acuna Jr., the young man, had an impressive night as well as he hit 25 home runs in the first round before falling to Alonso in the second. In all, the eight contestants in last night's home run derby combined for 311 home runs.
Chill.
I was hoping you'd do that. 311 home runs, the most ever in a single home run derby. You got one contestant in the finals right. I got the other one. I also picked Alex Bregman to be defeated in the first round. And that's what happened when Jock Peterson beat him 21-16. How crazy is that, though, Cody? You go up there, you think you're having a good night, right? 16 home runs in one round of the home run derby is pretty damn good, right? I mean, 16 is a pretty that's a pretty impressive number. And you lose by five. Like, if you're Bregman, you're like, really, man? And then you just sit that, you just sit back and you watch the show as Vlad Guerrero goes out there and hits 29, and Acuna Jr. hits 25 in the first round. It's not like the other guys didn't perform well. You know, sometimes you have those home run derbies and the guy will hit like three home runs, and you're like, bruh, what you doing? Like, what you doing, my man? Like, you're embarrassing yourself. Your family's here, they're watching, what are you doing? Come on. You should have took more BP. That wasn't the case. Josh Bell, who lost to Acuna, hit 18. Matt Chapman, the late scratch, the guy from the A's who came in to fill in for Yelich, he had 13, but hell, if he would have hit 20, it wouldn't have mattered because he matched up with Guerrero, who hit 29. How Alonso won, though, despite only having the third highest total, this is how. I'm not going to lie to you, Cody. After the first round, I was like, my guy has no chance. Because
I'm glad you're going to explain this to me, because as I said, I was kind of flipping back and forth between Home Run Derby and other things. So
you are the co-host of the 20 by 20 podcast, so it's your responsibility
right,
to watch Monday Night Raw. Okay, so you are forgiven.
Which is meh at best.
You don't need to apologize or explain yourself.
Fair enough.
Not with this audience and not with this show host. So Alonso barely gets out of the first round, dude. He hit 14. He beat Carlos Santana. No, not that Carlos Santana. Even though he should have played walk-up music of Santana, which would have been great. Pete Alonso barely beats Carlos Santana 14-13. The semifinals, Guerrero and Peterson have that three tiebreaker epic battle where Guerrero out hits him 40-39. But then in the semifinals, Alonso only hit 20. He edged out Ronald Acuna Jr. by one. It was 20-19. And then the finals, he was able to hit just one more home run than Vlad Guerrero, 23-22. What a home run derby it was. Record-breaking. Plenty of fireworks. During that triple tiebreaker semifinal between Peterson and Guerrero, I thought to myself, I turned to my wife, I go, I wonder if they have enough balls. And she goes, what are you talking about? I says, typically you don't hit this many. Typically there's a lot of balls that fall into the outfield that they can repurpose and reuse.
Shag them up.
Dude, brutal. Also, another cool thing, we didn't get to it on yesterday's show because we didn't know about it on yesterday's show. All the home run derby participants, Cody, they autographed a bunch of their own balls. So if you were out in the outfield, in the stands, and you caught some of the home run derby balls, there's a very distinct chance that they were autographed by the actual hitter. So I thought that was kind of a cool, that was a nice touch. Like, not only do you catch a home run derby home run ball, but it's also already autographed. That's got to be kind of cool.
So at some point, these guys sat in front of a giant bucket of balls and just signed. The proper bucket was made sure to be brought out.
Yeah, I don't think they signed like 100, but I think maybe like a dozen or 20 or something like that. But still, each one signed a small percentage. But so
that's pretty cool.
That is still, it's still pretty cool. But an epic home run derby last night, and that is definitely going to be one for the ages. And that's why it's still one of the all-star game festivities of the big league sports that I still love to watch. It's just fun, man. They have their caps on backwards. The kids are there. The families are on the field with them. It's very relaxed. They're all taking pictures. I just love it. Absolutely love it. And it did not disappoint last night there at Progressive Field in Cleveland. We'll keep the home run derby talk going. Up next, you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Yeah, you can also catch us on the simulcast, Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. You want to give us a call? Pick up the phone. Dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We led off today's show talking about the epic home run derby last night. Historic, record-breaking. Vlad Guerrero Jr. nearly hit 100 home runs and still lost, because this is done in a bracket. So you can hit 29 home runs in rounds one and rounds two and still fall short of winning the whole thing. Let's start right there for a second. Cody, you love the game of baseball. You actually coach the game of baseball to the youth of the lovely greater Pointe Coupee area. I forget what parish.
It's Pointe Coupee.
It's Pointe Coupee Parish. Yes. So, you and I love baseball. Are you okay with the format of the home run derby where a guy can hit 90 home runs and still loses the whole derby? Shouldn't it be whoever hits the most?
Yeah, I always looked at it this way. I always thought the home run derby should be two rounds. It should be the, you know, everybody go, okay, and then you've got your total number of home runs you hit in your round, and then the two guys with the most go again. But your first number doesn't go away. Nothing ever resets.
Okay.
And like, that's it. Yeah, that might take a couple of hours or a few, you know, if that takes the full length of a ball game and that's a problem for you, then let's not have six people in it. Let's have four people in it. Like, we don't, you know, it's already, you know, granted, Pete Alonso won, but did Robert Acuna Jr. and Alex Bregman need to be in this home run derby? You know, the way it played out is what I'm saying. Did they need to be there? So if you think it's going to be too long to just have everyone go and then nothing reset and then everyone go, or then the top two guys go once more, if that's going to last too long for you, then let's just do it with less people. But I've always thought, and it's not even as important to me that you, you know, do it in two rounds or you do it just, I don't like the whole resetting. You know, why is everyone, why are we going back to zero? What happened to the 8,000 home runs I hit, you know, in the last round? Why don't those still count?
Because you're right. Because Vlad hits 29 and then 29. And then he hits 22. So he hit 91 home runs, right? And I'm looking at Alonso, who hit 14, 24. So that gives him 34. 34 plus 23 is 57.
So it's like it's almost not quite half, but you know, I mean, it's
and here's the other thing. When you think of home run derby moments, like you think about Josh Hamilton's epic night at Yankee Stadium, right?
Right.
Where he blasted all those home runs. But did Hamilton even win that year? Like we're going to remember last night's home run derby. I guarantee you, if we have this question in 2 years, and I open up the show. RP3 and Company right here on KDN Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. And I go, do you remember who won the 2019 Home Run Derby? 9 out of 10 callers are going to be like Vlad Guerrero Jr. Because that's what you're going to remember. You're not going to remember that Pete Alonso hit nearly 30 less home runs or more than 30 less home runs and lost and won the Home Run Derby. So as exciting, as thrilling, as epic as it was last night, I don't know. That is kind of interesting. That your breakout star, right, because he is the son of the Hall of Famer. He is a rookie. He's going to be the face of Major League Baseball moving forward. And he drills 91 home runs and doesn't win when the other guy only hit 57.
We all know. We all see the numbers.
That
doesn't mean, I guess, Vlad Guerrero Jr. could use that $1 million, though.
Right, because both guys are only getting paid like $500,000 this year.
Although Guerrero Jr.'s daddy got a hold of
it. Oh, I think Vlad's being taken care of.
He's
good to go. The actual All-Star game, though, will be tonight. And that's what we heard coming out of the break. Alex Bregman, the former LSU Tiger and current Houston Astros star, is getting the start. It's his first All-Star Game start. He was a reserve last year where he ended up winning the All-Star Game MVP. Astros will have 6 guys there tonight. Verlander will be getting the start on the bump. Bregman, Michael Brantley, and George Springer, Michael Brantley will be out in the outfield as starters. And Gerrit Cole and Presley will be coming out of the bullpen for the American League roster. ALNL tonight, All-Star Game Midsummer Classic. Can't wait to see how the former LSU Tigers and the current Houston Astros do. We got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk Pelican Summer League right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. We can also be found on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. That clip you heard was not really someone being murdered. The announcers got very excited in the summer league.
What it was Mankind being thrown off of Hell in a Cell at whatever that WrestleMania, whatever that was, Jim Ross layered over. Who runs the Pelicans Twitter account?
Outstanding. First of all, bravo to the Pelicans Twitter account.
So Jackson Hayes posterizes some other poor schmuck in the summer league, and apparently whoever runs the Pelicans Twitter account layered Jim Ross calling Mankind being thrown off the top of Hell in a Cell over Jackson Hayes posterizing this poor young fellow.
That's why I sent you the clip, because it's amazing. Summer League, you don't get Zion Williamson if you're a Pels fan, but guess what? You got to see Jackson Hayes finally up close and personal, because the trade that secured the big fella, your traditional 7-foot center out of the University of Texas, Hook'em Horns. That was done on draft night with the Atlanta Hawks, and he was part of that package. Well, all those guys are finally in Pels uniforms, and they played last night in the Summer League game, a game that the Pels won 109-72. Yes, they played the Bulls. Yes, the Bulls are not very good in regular league play and summer league play. This is going to be a fun one to talk about, is what summer league head coach for the New Orleans Pelicans, Fred Vinson, said as he approached a group of media members afterwards. That seemed to channel the thoughts of every Pelicans fan who tuned in for the Monday debuts of draft picks Jackson Hayes, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and Didi Luzada. The trio probably could have produced, could not have produced a better, more entertaining performance. And this follows, they had their introductory press conference at the Thomas and Mack Center in Vegas. 90 minutes later, they played their game. Hayes made his statement early with that first half slam over that poor Chicago defender. I'm not going to name the young man because I don't want to embarrass him and his family. It was an absolute beatdown. It was a filthy dunk. Hayes would go on to score 28 points in his Pelicans Summer League debut. Alexander Walker, meanwhile, controlled the game from the opening minute. He finished with 23 points and 8 assists, while Luzada chipped in 13 points with 2 blocks and 2 steals. The draft class was minus, of course, Zion Williamson, out for the precautionary reasons for the remainder of the summer league. But the Pels 2019 draft class combined for 64 points last night on 24-41 shooting, including goes 6-10 from three-point range. This is despite the fact that none of the draftees logged more than 27 minutes. They didn't even need their rooks to play more than 27 minutes. They're like, no, we're good. We're good. They had waited since June the 20th, which was draft night, to be able to play for the Pels, delayed by the finalization from the league offices of the Anthony Davis trade, which I still don't understand why that takes so damn long, for real. The Pels raced out to a 20-point lead through the first three quarters and then quickly pushed the edge into the 30s early in the final period. And Hayes has been described as a project player. Now, I understand that he's playing against competition on the same level as he. Other first-round draft picks, other late-round draft picks, maybe first-year, second-year guys. I get that. And one of the big reasons why they talked about that Hayes is, in fact, a project is because he was a late bloomer in high school who's only been competing at a high level for 2 basketball seasons. Yet, man, he looked really good. He's 6'11". He moved on those fast breaks. Had a series of dunks. By the way, Hayes' career high in scoring in college was just 19 points. He scored 28 last night. Maybe his game is, I don't know, ready for the NBA. Once again, it is summer league. Can't get too crazy about that. But had to be a promising night if you're the Pels front office seeing your youngins out there just demolishing the competition. I mean, that's what you want to see, right? You want to see these guys out there just demolishing everyone that they're facing. Because that's what you want to see. You want to see that this is why you drafted these guys. This is what you want to see. You want to see these guys just go bazonkers out there. Tear up the competition, beat up everyone that they face. And look, they're going to have growing pains. Do you expect the three draft picks to struggle a little bit for the Pels? Yeah, absolutely. But the summer league is where we get to see an early glimpse of what they can do. Possibly what kind of role they can have for this team moving forward. And more importantly, for the coaching staff, even though it's a brief amount of time, the summer league doesn't last that long. It's only a handful of games. You can look at your guys. You can see what they need to improve on more than anything. And that way you and the coaching staff, and in this case Alvin Gentry and his staff, know what things they need to work on with their guys. Zion Williamson, even though they only briefly saw him for about 9 or 10 minutes, he needs to improve his defense. He's not quite there. He has to grow into becoming a better defender. So, Hayes, Luzada, Alexander Walker, they'll have an opportunity to show what they can do moving forward. You know who else played last night? He didn't have a double-double, but Cavell Bigby-Williams came off the bench, the former LSU star. Played once again for the Pelicans in the summer league. Played 19 minutes. He was 2-for-3 from the field. Pulled down 6 total rebounds, had a block shot. Scored 5 points. This is what the former LSU Tiger had to say prior to last night's game following his back-to-back performances of double-doubles. This is what the former LSU star said about that, you know, he needs to take great pride in his defensive side of the game and that he's just trying to earn his spot. He played well last night, 19 minutes, only 5 points. Look, you're going to want the offensive game to improve, but this is someone who likes to do the dirty work, and this is someone who's all about taking pride in what he can do on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I put up a lot of effort. You know, I take pride on defense. And the fact that I play so hard on defense, it kind of, you know, sparks some offense sometimes. So the fact that I was able to do that today, I'm grateful and I appreciate it.
And this is what the former LSU Tiger had to say following his performance overall on Saturday. On Saturday night there in Vegas in the Summer League, he recorded his 2nd straight double-double for the Pelicans summer league team.
It's been kind of tough, but you know, I'm used to, you know, adversity and playing in adverse situations. So, you know, I just go out every day and try to play as hard as I can, and that's on the defensive end. And then I let the offense come. Tonight I was able to get 14-14, which is pretty good. So, grateful and praise God for it.
If I'm the Pels, and obviously I'm not because I'm talking to you right now at 6:44 in the morning. On 103.7 The Game. It is Acadiana Sports Station, by the way. And not running the front office of the New Orleans Pelicans. I do not have Gail Benson on speed dial. But if I was, I'd have a spot for Cavell Bigby-Williams. High character guy. That's what you're wanting, right? You've purged your roster. You have guys who want to be there. You have a young core that's hungry to win, that's hungry to do things the right way. They're believing in this process that David Griffin and Trangon Langdon are putting together down there in New Orleans. Bigby Williams is that kind of guy. He does things the right way. He's a glue guy. He doesn't mind doing the dirty work. Also, look what he was able to do with Naz Reid over the course of the year. Naz Reid leaned on Cavell Bigby Williams a lot during their season together there at LSU. And Naz Reid became a better player over the course of the year because of it. But Cavell Bigby-Williams stepped up when LSU needed him. If you don't have Cavell Bigby-Williams on that roster as a senior Oregon transfer, a guy who had Final Four experience, a guy who did not mind doing the dirty work, getting down there, blocking shots, getting rebounds, playing tough, not needing the spotlight on him, LSU does not advance to the Sweet 16. LSU does not win the regular season SEC championship. They just don't. That's how important Cavale Bigby-Williams was to this last year's LSU team. And what is he showing you in the summer league? He's showing you that he can get up and down the court, that he can play defense, that he can rebound. If I'm the Pels, I add him to the roster. Maybe you add him to your G League team. Maybe you just put him on one of those two-way contracts. But I lock this guy up because I do believe Cavale Bigby-Williams is playing his way into a contract with someone. You would like to see him stay in state. Went to LSU, have him stay, play for the Pels. But if he doesn't, don't be surprised if you see this young man playing for some franchise, even if it's in the G League, because you got to love what he brings to the table. We got to hit a break. We'll close out hour number one, talking a little bit more G League. What did Tremont Waters do last night? The Boston Celtics. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Before we get back to the G League talk, just want to let you guys know, you can go to the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse Rewards Club at 103.7thegame.com for your chance to enter to win a $50 gift card to Poor Boys Riverside Inn in Little River Inn. The only thing you had to do, go to our Clubhouse Rewards Club at 103.7thegame.com and enter for your chance to win a $50 gift card. So make sure to do that today. We're going to keep the G League conversation moving forward. We talked about the Pels in the last segment, about how the other rookies stood up, including Jackson Hayes, who inspired people all across social media to put over Jim Ross's voice track from a famous steel cage match.
Hell in a Cell, get it right.
There we go. Mankind Undertaker, yes.
That's the one.
I remember that one. Because Jackson Hayes, the young man out of the University of Texas, demolished the poor Chicago player. We also talked about Cavale Bigby-Williams, former LSU Tiger, doing his thing, playing well, coming off the bench for the New Orleans Pelicans last night. He sure does seem like he's working his way into at least earning a spot on a G League roster. He wasn't the only former Tiger that had himself a good game last night. Tremont Waters, all-SEC first-teamer, co-defensive player of the year in the Southeastern Conference. Second-round draft pick of the Boston Celtics. He played last night, chalked in 20 minutes, 5 for 9 from the field, 1 from 4 from three-point range. He actually had 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, scored 11 points. A good night for Tremont Waters. He did have, though, the 4 turnovers. And that's going to be the thing about Tremont. If Tremont wants to last in the NBA, he's undersized. He can overcome that. Okay? Even though the guard position's getting bigger, he's not exactly big. He's 5'10", 5'11 on a good day. But he's going to be a spark plug. He can play defense for you. We know that. He was the co-defensive player of the year last year. First team all SEC defense. He can distribute well. But he gets loose with that handle of his. And 4 turnovers. That was the most turnovers by any Boston Celtic player last night. So, a lot of good last night in 20 minutes of play, scoring double-digit points, 3 steals, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. That's a good stat line. But the 4 turnovers, that's something that the young man's going to have to do so he can be able to stick in this league. Because if you are a liability turning over the ball, you don't last in this league unless you're the Billy Goat James Harden and you can score 40 points a night. And play for Mike D'Antoni, who doesn't care about defense. But Waters' performance was good enough to help the Celtics to an 89-72 win over the poor Cleveland Cavaliers. Just, you got to feel kind of bad for him, right? Kind of? Maybe not. So it's interesting, though. I do believe Waters is going to have an opportunity to be coming off the bench with everything that's changed with Boston. Look, Brad Stevens likes, Tremont Waters has the type of personality. He plays the game. He's coachable. Those are all things that this line up with what Brad Stevens wants to do. Brad Stevens loves guys that want to play defense. So Waters' ability to be a defender is going to keep him on the roster. His size will hurt him, though, because the NBA is getting bigger at the guard spots. Okay? He's 5'11". You're having guards out there that are now 6'5", 6'6". Ben Simmons plays the guard spot. He's like 6'7", 6'8". Okay? The guard spot is getting massively bigger. I don't care how good a defender and tenacious you are, size does make a difference. So Tremont's going to have to overcome his size, and he's going to have to make sure to overcome the turnovers as well. He wasn't the only state guy to get some love last night as well. How about Jakeenan Gant? Remember, he went undrafted. He signed the two-way deal with the Indiana Pacers. He came off the bench, played briefly last night, only appeared 3 minutes. He went 0 for 3 from the field, 0 for 1 from three-point range. No rebounds, no blocks, no nothing like that. So, but he's getting some playing time. Gant's more than likely going to be designated to the G League team for the Pacers. They have enough depth, especially at his position, the power forward spot, that it's going to be tough for him to make the big roster. But he could develop like Sean Long did a few years ago with the Philadelphia 76ers, where he played the majority of the season with the G League team and then moved up to the big boy roster. Jakeenan Gant's going to have that opportunity. So a scoreless night for him last night, but still, he's getting playing time. He'll go through camp with the Pacers. He'll get an opportunity to make it on their G League roster, which is where I anticipate seeing him moving forward. He's going to need to be developed. His game needs a little bit of growth. And he wasn't the only one. Naz Reid, who also went undrafted, the big fella from LSU. He started last night for the Minnesota Timberwolves in a 100-91 victory. Played 21 minutes, went 5-11 from the field, scored 12 points, got 4 rebounds and 3 assists. He could possibly make the roster. If he does play G League, it'll be briefly. I could see Naz Reid finding himself on the roster as a bench player for the Minnesota Timberwolves, even though they have a logjam at his position as well. That's going to do it for the first hour of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll honor the man who was laid to rest yesterday, the legend, Tony Robichaux, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
He was a living testament, and you know, he saw himself so much more than a baseball coach. But at the same time, he saw himself just as a simple man, and that's what was, I think, really unique about him. But you know, again, we all kind of emulate that type of persona when people are looking at us and how we want to emulate ourselves.
That was Dr. Brian Maggard talking about Tony Robichaux, who was laid to rest yesterday after a visitation at Our Lady of Fatima. He was buried in his hometown of Crowley. And there was a procession. Tons of people came out wearing red yesterday. Family actually asked folks to honor him by wearing red, and people came along the procession line from the church all the way to Crowley. Tony Robichaux, who just wrapped up his 25th year as the head baseball coach at the University of Louisiana. A man known for his robisms, his sayings, but also heralded as a man who took great pride in taking boys and molding them into men. I can't tell you how many times I had conversations with Coach Robe and they didn't even involve baseball. That's, you know, he would talk about a player and he would talk about the character of that young man and what they were going to be becoming and how he believed wholeheartedly that they were going to be a success in the business world or in the private sector. He even though he had a brilliant baseball mind, he very rarely talked baseball. He talked more about character and accountability and integrity. And that's what he was known for. Dr. Brian Maggard talked to the media yesterday before the funeral. And he talked a little bit about what's comforted him in the last few days, because obviously Dr. Brian Maggard's been on the job a few years as the athletic director. You do form close relationships with your coaches, and he became close with Robe quite quickly. And this is what Dr. Brian Maggard had to say about what's been comforting him since the sudden passing of the Raging Cajun legend.
Yeah, you know, for me there is, and that is, I know where Tony is today. I know where his fate lied, and certainly I know that he's in a far better place, and you know, he would not be shy to admit, you know, that his destination was heaven, and in my heart of hearts, I know that's where he is today. So that's why I take great comfort in that.
Dr. Maggard also talked about the reaction from the student-athletes. You got to remember, Robe passes in the offseason, so a lot of his players, current players that are supposed to be coming back next year, not talking about guys that have graduated or former players that reached out and gave their appreciation and expressed their sadness that they lost their coach. The current players, guys that are playing the Cape Cod League and playing across the country during summer ball, you know, a lot of them aren't on campus. A lot of them, you know, some of them probably even couldn't come back for the visitation or the funeral. And this is what Dr. Brian Maggard had to say about the reaction from the student athletes there at UL.
Initially, when I spoke with them over the weekend, I think they were still in shock, like most of us were at that time. You know, it's one of these things, I think over time it will continue to hit us a little bit more. And I told each of them when I spoke to them that I think there'll be different milestones as we progress through this, you know, the first for them being when they come back in the fall, you know, and Tony Robichaux isn't there. But again, I told them that we are here for them, we love them, and we will help see them through this.
I like the fact that, you know, very much kind of like we're there for them, that they're going to help them through this, because this will be a process. Robe may have been laid to rest yesterday, but the grief process of losing an iconic man, a pillar of the community, is going to take a long time to get over, not only for the players, but for the students, for the faculty, for those assistant coaches, and for members of the community. It's a long process. Grief is not something that's easily taken care of. It's just not. They did have a massive visitation on Sunday. We talked about it on yesterday's show at the Cajun Dome Convention Center, where thousands, plural, people came to show their respects to the man they loved, the man called Robe. And this is what Dr. Maggard had to say about the thousands of people that showed up to pay tribute to Robichaux.
Well, you know, for me, it was certainly a great tribute to a great man. You know, not remotely surprised by the number of people who showed up for his visitation. And again, just reinforced the number of people that he touched, whether directly or indirectly, you know, through his role as a great husband, a great father, a great man, and a great coach.
You also have to come away being immensely impressed with Robichaux's family, who was there for the visitation, the strength that they have been showing through this whole process. We've heard, you know, reports that Colleen, his wife, he was even reaching out to players herself in the days since his passing. This is what Dr. Maggard had to say and how impressed he was on the Robichaux family.
Literally, their strength has comforted me, to be honest with you. It's a situation where, you know, when you look at the family and know how close they were, and to see, you know, we know they're hurting, we know they're sad, but to see the level of comfort that they have, knowing where their husband and dad is, I find that very comforting.
So Tony was laid to rest yesterday, as we said. They had a final visitation at Our Lady of Fatima here in Lafayette, and then the procession led from there, wound its way through Lafayette, and went all the way to Crowley, where he was laid to rest. Only 57 years old, and the man was an institution. He'd been the head baseball coach for the Raging Cajuns for 25 years. That's a generation. Man won more than 1,000 games. He won so many games. He won so many championships. Began his career at McNeese State before coming back to the Raging Cajuns, where he played ball. Took over 25 years ago. Led them to unprecedented heights, NCAA regionals, NCAA super regionals, their first and only College World Series appearance. By the way, that College World Series appearance by the Cajuns was the first and remains the last time a Sun Belt team advanced to Omaha. Coastal Carolina's national championship was prior to them joining the Sun Belt Conference. When you think of UL athletics, football coaches have come and gone. Basketball coaches have come and gone. Hell, even softball coaches have come and gone. Tony remained. He was UL Athletics, just not the baseball coach. When you thought about Raging Cajun Athletics, the first coach that came to mind, Tony Robichaud, because he was the steady hand. He'd been there so long. Dr. Brian Maggard was asked, where do they go from here?
Well, I think, you know, we're gonna capture one of Tony's taglines, and that is prepare to progress. You know, we're going to do that. And that's what he would want. That's what I know, you know, whether it was a Lynn Williams or other members who we've lost, you know, from this family, they would want the Raging Cajuns to move forward and to progress. And we're going to do that. But we're going to do it together. It's not something that will happen overnight. You know, we'll be sad. We'll miss Tony for sure, and all the others that we've lost. But we will move forward together. We'll get through this together. But it will take some time. It will take some time. But we are all going to prepare to progress.
It will take some time. He's exactly correct. And I wouldn't anticipate them making a decision on who's going to serve as interim coach or who's going to be the new head coach for months. I think they're going to do it just out of respect and take their time there. And finally, this is what Dr. Brian Maggard had to say on what Coach Robe's legacy is going to be.
He's a man of great faith and great principles. And what I think I loved about him as much as anything is how consistent he was. He never wavered. He had principles. He was not afraid to share those principles. He stood by those principles. And as he talked the talk, he certainly walked the walk.
Talk the talk, walk the walk. That's a great way to describe Tony Robichaud. We got to hit a break, but we'll continue the Tony Robichaud talk coming up next as we welcome on from the Daily Advertiser, Tim Buckley, on the legacy of Tony Robichaud and where does the program go from here. We'll touch on all those topics and much more coming up here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He covers Raging Cajun Athletics for the Daily Advertiser. It's the one and only Tim Buckley. Tim, how are you today?
Like everybody else, drained at the end of a long week or 2 weeks or whatever it's been now.
It's been definitely a trying time for all of Acadiana. Let's start off there with what occurred Sunday, where thousands of people from across the region and across the city of Lafayette came and paid their respects there at the Cajun Dome Convention Center to Coach Robe and his family. What were some of your takeaways from that outpouring of support?
Well, the turnout reflected, I think, what you know, Robe meant to the community. The line of people coming to pay their last respects and show their respect was, you know, crazy long, literally winding through the convention center lobby from a point to where he couldn't even see the front of it from the end of it. And when people say that thousands went through, I think that's literal. How many, I couldn't tell you, but certainly thousands. And you know, for somebody who spent 25 years, I suppose, to some level, you know, you might expect that. But by the same token, it was 25 years well spent. And I think that the emotions that the people in those lines were feeling, the way he conducted himself during that tenure, were reflected in those emotions.
We're talking with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tim, you saw an outpouring of grief and yet appreciation from his former players across social media. I know you've done a few stories about that with former Raging Cajun stars, and a theme that keeps popping up in the articles that you've done and the information that you've have reported on is very rarely do any of these former players talk about baseball when they talk about Robe. They talk about him helping them become men. Is that what we're always kind of going to remember Tony for?
Oh, absolutely. It was all about boys to men, and it had absolutely nothing to do with the singing group. It was about taking these kids who played a sport that they loved and using it to make them better human beings. And, you know, I've heard the tales, and I've heard from Robe's own lips, you know, about how he didn't want to be remembered for the baseball, and he's certainly getting his wish in that regard. And, you know, from the get-go, the ones that I've spoken with, you know, whether they've played majors or never, you know, made it to the minors, they all had the same theme when they were talking about him, and it was about how, you know, he cared about four things. He cared about making them better husbands, better fathers, better God-fearing men, and better friends. And, you know, based on the ones that I know that have gone through that program, he was pretty darn successful.
We're talking with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tim, you've been on this beat for quite a long time. What was your first impression and one of your first encounters, exchanges with Tony?
You know, the first time I ever met him was I came down on the job interview, and Kevin Foote, our beloved competitor, yours on a different radio station, mine now at a different newspaper, was driving me around when I came to interview for the job at the Advertiser, and he took me over to show the facilities. And sure enough, there was Coach Robe walking from the Cox Center over to the baseball stadium, as I've probably seen him do certainly hundreds and maybe thousands of times myself since then. And he was the first Cajuns coach that I talked to, the first one that Kevin introduced me to. And he didn't just, you know, offer a handshake and continue on to the stadium. He stood there and he talked for a while. And you know, come full circle. He come full circle. Last fall, my best buddy, from Memphis, my best friend and his wife came through, and I was driving through the area of the football stadium, the baseball stadium, basically showing them the same thing that Kevin Foote showed me. And sure enough, there was Robe walking across the street, and we pulled over. Actually, we didn't pull over. I think we just stopped in the middle of the street and got out. And sure enough, he spent like, you know, 5-10 minutes talking with him, and he left a really solid impression.
We're talking with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. He covers the Raging Cajuns here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tim, he had an enormous amount of success with this team, the College World Series trip, the Super Regionals, the numerous regionals, all the guys drafted. But a big part of his legacy is also what he was able to do behind the scenes and kind of spearhead turning the Teague into a palace. Can you share, you know, that insight on just how active Robe was in getting Russo Park to be what it is today?
Well, you know, it even goes long before that. You know, before my time, I've heard the tales of him basically selling the advertising space on that entire outfield wall ad by ad, him chewing that himself. You know, long before the days of fancy marketing and, you know, salespeople and all of that. You know, he took care of all that. He was the one, you know, out there grooming the field himself. So long before the 18.5 million or whatever in renovations, he was the one nurturing that field and that stadium. And then, you know, as far as the renovation that goes, and, you know, the tale has been told many a time, but most, if not all, of what you see right now started as an idea that he etched out on a napkin. And, you know, he sought, you know, his vision through to a realization. You know, it's a bird red phrase, he built it brick by brick, brick by brick. That's essentially what he's done. And I asked him one time, you know, where's it, you know, is it like in a frame hanging on your wall? Is it, you know, sitting on your desk? Where's the napkin? He's like, I don't know. He goes, I guess I'll just have to get a new napkin and start my new plans on that one.
Oh, we're wrapping up here with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Tim, obviously it's a moment of reflection, and with Tony's funeral being on Monday, and, you know, the grief process will continue on. It's not going to be done by the end of the week by any stretch of the imagination, as we know. But where does the program now go from here after the unexpected and extremely sad passing of their fearless leader?
Well, I asked just that to Anthony Babineau, of course, Rogue's right-hand man for so many seasons, who told a great anecdote, by the way, of just happening to run into Tony Rogue's show on the day that that he was hired, the day that he had his introductory news conference, in that same street where I ran into him so many times, going from the Cox building over toward the stadiums. And Babineau's meeting was not by chance. He went over there on purpose to bump into Tony Robe's show because he wanted to be a part of Robe's program going forward. And sure enough, here he still is 25 years later. But in any event, I asked Bab that exact same question. And, you know, he made the point that the first and foremost, the most important thing is that they be there for all those kids and give them the support they need through this time in terms of all the current players. And, you know, because some of them are still separated in various parts of the country and whatnot, it'll take some time. It'll really start coming together when they come back on campus. And in August, for those who are not, you know, have not been able to make it back for the past few days, and all it'll take some time, and then the rest of it, they'll just figure it out from there.
Well, Tim, appreciate you making some time out for us. Continue the excellent work with the difficult task of all the reporting that you've been doing concerning the passing of Coach Robe. We appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
You got it, Raymond. Take care.
It's Tim Buckley, the Daily Advertiser, joining us there on the Arco Equipment Hotline, breaking down Tony Robichaux, his passing, how the team moves on from here, and everything in between. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company is coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's better known as the Stadium Network. 24 hours of sports coverage, free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to, give us a call. ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We got not one but two guests lined up in hour number three for you. Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's going to be talking all things Hoodats with us at 8:32. But at 8:02, we're going to begin hour number three with some NBA talk with the former Raging Cajun star and current New York Knick. That's right, Elfrid Payton will be joining the program at 8:02. Right now, I want to come back to the NBA talk. Pelicans, they have dominated this offseason. Terrific move after terrific move by David Griffin. We've talked ad nauseum about the moves that he's made throughout the front office, training facility, the whole nine yards. But now it's about the players. It's about Zion Williamson taking number one overall. It's also about the other young men that they selected in the draft. Jackson Hayes out of Texas, who had a monstrous dunk last night in the summer league game there in Las Vegas for the Pels. They have some nice young talent. They have the young core that they got away from the Los Angeles Lakers in the trade for Anthony Davis. A lot of moving parts, a lot of enthusiasm, excitement, buzz is building for the Pels. The man who's been orchestrating all of that, of course, is David Griffin, Vice President of Basketball Ops for the Pels. He was asked yesterday about a multitude of things. And he expressed how important it is for having an owner, a general manager, who's in this case Dragan Langdon, former Duke star, who is running the G League affiliate of the Brooklyn Nets that they hired in the offseason, and a coach, Alvin Gentry, all on the same page, and how critical that is for a franchise to have success, not only for this year, but for years to come.
We really believe that ownership, your head coach, and the person running basketball operations need to be in lockstep together. Mm-hmm. And so it was really meaningful to me that we were able to sort of find our owner in Mrs. Benson. It's a perfect fit with Mrs. Benson, with Alvin and myself. I think we really do understand how we're going to succeed together, and we're invested in one another in that way.
Everyone's on the same page, right? He has a commitment from Gail Benson, the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans, who's also, of course, the owner of the New Orleans Saints. He's being allowed to be the vice president of basketball operations and run the front office the way he sees fit. The coach is on board with what they want to do. Langdon is on board. They're all on the same page on what they want to do, the foundation that they're trying to lay there in New Orleans with this basketball team. Griffin also talked about part of that foundation, of course, is the Anthony Davis trade that got them three players back, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, and picks. Some of those they've already flipped into other picks and more players. This is what he had to say about the AD trade.
We were really grateful that it materialized in the way that it did. Anthony is such a spectacular player and somebody who was so good for the team and for our community. He's not somebody that when he goes away you're going to replace, but we're really comfortable with the way everything came together in terms of the players we were able to get, the draft picks that we were able to secure, and in the future really that we were able to secure in those future picks.
Once again, he takes Anthony Davis, he trades the perennial all-star, he gets three players in return. Two of those guys are more than likely going to be starters, Lonzo Ball at the point guard, Ingram at the three, at your small forward position. Then Josh Hart will come off the bench. He'll eat up a good portion of minutes. And then they took the pick that he got from the Lakers and flipped that to the Hawks to get multiple picks, and they got two more guys to take in the first round. So they have a nice young core of players. And this is what Griff had to say about the build, the construction of this New Orleans Pelicans franchise.
I think when you look at the pace we like to play at and the athleticism and length that we can put on the court at virtually every position, mm-hmm. and the selflessness that those players play with, we feel very strongly that we're heading in the right direction in terms of play creation. what we're going to have to do is continue to augment the roster with play terminators, right, people that can space the court and shoot, and hopefully we'll be able to finish off some trades that'll give us dynamic rolling finishing as well.
You heard that? They're not done. They're not done. Don't be surprised if they make some other type of minor move right now during the off-season period. And don't be surprised if they make a move around the trade deadline as well. Griffin's going to tinker with this. They're going to build up this foundation. They're going to have this young core that's going to provide that foundation. Not only is it going to be Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, but it's also going to be, of course, Zion Williamson, the young man of Virginia Tech that they selected, Jackson Hayes out of Texas, the free agents that they brought in, okay? This is a fluid situation. They're not going to settle. If they see an opportunity to get better without having to sacrifice that much, they're going to do so. You can count on that. Zion Williamson, he was the big prize, right? When the Pels stunned the world and they somehow found a way to win the NBA draft lottery, putting apparently the entire tri-state area on the East Coast into disarray and depression for Zion Williamson not going to be playing for the New York Knicks. That was the big crown jewel, right? He's only 19 years old, freshman phenom from Duke. He only played 9 minutes in his summer league debut the other night on Friday night before he bumped knees with another player. It's precautionary measures. They're going to shut him down. But he also, interestingly, said that, you know, he's going to work. They're going to work with his conditioning. Zion is a big guy, okay? There's reasons why they make comparisons to Charles Barkley, who was known as the round mound of basketball, okay? Zion is a freakish athlete, but he's a big guy. He's like 270, right? 280. He's a big kid. Conditioning is going to be important, especially the way Alvin Gentry wants to run the ball. So they shut him down as a precautionary measure. He only got to see him for 9 minutes. He needs to work on his defense. He's only 19. He's still a baby. He's still growing into his adult body in a lot of ways. So the ceiling is super high for Zion Williamson. And the expectations are great. He's the number one overall selection for the Pels. Jrue Holiday is going to be the leader of this team, but the face of the franchise is the young man out of Duke. Make no mistake about it. No matter what Griff and others try to tell you. Oh, this is, yeah, it's Drew's team until Zion's ready for it to become his team. But he's the face of the franchise. He's the one that's going to be on the side of the Smoothie King Center. Okay? He's the one that's going to be on the tickets, the whole nine yards, T-shirts, everything else. And this is what Griffin and his team in the front office have talked to Zion about. What his role is going to be and what expectations are going to be for him.
Whoever won the lottery, the night of the lottery, to spend time with Zion at the hotel. And Alvin Gentry and I got to speak with Zion that night. And we were so taken by him as a kid, we asked if his parents were there. And we asked his parents to come down. And we all spent about an hour and a half together that night. And we really understood that his family understood what our family was going to try to do. We're going to raise a family that loves each other enough to tell each other what we need to hear. And that's what Zion wanted and needed. His family wanted that as well. And the first thing we said was, listen, you're an 18-year-old kid. He's 19 today, actually.
Yes,
so happy birthday.
What'd you get him for his birthday?
But yeah, a cake. But we were in a situation where we really wanted him to just focus on becoming the best Zion he can be. You're not here to carry this franchise. That's what Jrue Holiday is for. We've got a player that this is going to be built around.
Once again, there he is again. You don't have to carry this franchise. Look, New Orleans loves Jrue. We love Jrue. One of the best two-way players in the league. But those thousands of people that showed up on Fulton Street on draft night, they weren't cheering because Jrue Holiday's still on the team. They were cheering, having a good time. I want to say a few adult beverages were probably in the mix because Zion Williamson was coming to be a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. Drew's the leader. And Zion will learn about Zion will learn about becoming a leader from guys like Drew Holiday and others. You know, in particular, that's why they traded for Derek Favors from the Utah Jazz, a guy who's nearly a double-double guy. A cat that's nearly a double-double guy. He's been in the league a long time. He's been to the playoffs. He knows what it takes. He doesn't play the same position as Zion. Now, he did last year because of the configuration that the Jazz had. But Derek Favors is going to be the veteran guy that's going to take not only Jackson Hayes underneath his wing, but he's also going to take Zion Williamson under his wing and show him the ropes. They are going to bring Zion along. Zion will be a starter from jump. Count on it. But they will bring him along. They will mentor him, and they will let him grow and blossom into becoming a superstar. Griffin's trying to do all he can to make sure there's not a ton of pressure on the young man. One player that I'm interested to see what the Pels do with, is Brandon Ingram, former Duke star. People have talked a lot about his potential. What is his potential? He hasn't reached his potential. And of the three guys that they got from the Lakers in the Anthony Davis trade, he's the one that could be the best of the three. He could also be the one that they could possibly trade by the trade deadline. Ingram's going to have to show them something. I firmly believe without a doubt that Lonzo Ball is going to be an absolute great player for the Pels. He may not be a great scorer, but he'll be a great player for the Pels because he's going to run the point and he's going to play defense, and that's what they want him to do. Him and Drew Holiday, the defense there, nasty. Josh Hart's an energy guy. He can come off the bench, give Drew a rest, sometimes maybe give Lonzo a rest. I expect big things from Josh Hart. Ingram's the question mark. Of all the guys that they've drafted and all the guys that they've traded for, he's the one that you go, okay, we don't know what's going to happen. We know his potential. He has the potential and the makeup to be an all-star. He just hasn't shown it yet. And another issue when it comes to Brandon Ingram is he has the blood clot issue. He has a health concern. Griffin addressed that as well during the summer league play over the weekend.
We're really comfortable with where Brandon is in his rehab. He's done a tremendous job. He's put in an awful lot of work. The Lakers medical staff has done a tremendous job with him to this point. And so we feel like he's in a very good space and really ready to attack this next phase, which will be return to play and getting ready for training camp.
He could be the steal. You know Zion's going to be a star. We think Jackson Hayes can be a dominant player as well. They've done so good in the draft. They've done so good with the trades. They've done, you know, in free agency, signing J.J. Redick, trading for Derek Favors, getting the big Euro, the stretch four. They've made great moves. Ingram, for me, is the biggest question mark for this team. If he plays to his potential and is healthy, he could be an all-star. We just haven't seen it yet. But I always remind folks, we thought D'Angelo Russell was trash. He leaves the Lakers, goes to the Brooklyn Nets, leads them to the playoffs, becomes an all-star. Julius Randle leaves the Lakers. They thought he was trash. He comes to the New Orleans Pelicans, averages nearly a double-double. These Laker players, maybe they just weren't evaluated properly. Maybe they weren't developed properly. Maybe they weren't being coached. So we'll see. Ingram will have the opportunity to show everyone that he is one of the best young players in the game. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up hour number two. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. This hour we've talked about Tony Robichaud being laid to rest yesterday, his legacy as we caught up with our friend Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. We also talked about the moves David Griffin is making with the New Orleans Pelicans, with the draft, free agency, and whatnot. Also want to now go back to college football. Talk about Puka Williams. Folks in the Acadiana area remember what Puka did as a high school star here in the state of Louisiana, as he went on a tremendous run during the high school playoffs, including run for monstrous numbers against one of our local teams. Now, he left the state, signed with Kansas Jayhawks. And he had a tremendous freshman year for the Jayhawks. Proved to be an all-purpose back. He appeared in 11 games last year for the Jayhawks. He rushed for almost 1,200 yards, averaging 7 yards per carry with 7 rushing touchdowns. He also caught more than 30 passes for nearly 300 yards and 2 more scores. He was a first-team All-Big 12 selection. He was also a kick returner for the Jayhawks, returning 11 kicks. Former 4-star prospect. And he had a huge game against Oklahoma, where he rushed for 252 yards and scored 3 total touchdowns. But Puka got into trouble in the offseason. And on Monday, KU announced that he will be rejoining the team after a 7-month suspension from all team-related activities as a result of a domestic battery charge back in December. He will also be now suspended for KU's football season opener against Indiana State, the Sycamores, which will be on August 31st. Williams said in a KU Athletics release, quote, "My behavior was unacceptable, and I'm very sorry to those who were impacted by my poor choices. I'm disappointed in myself, not just as a man, but as a student athlete looked up to by younger kids. My suspension from football has been hard, but I've learned from it. I'm thankful I can continue with my education at KU. Looking ahead, the most important thing to me is to regain the trust and respect of my classmates, teammates, and fans. I'm humbled to return to football and to prepare for the season." Williams was arrested in December on suspicion of domestic battery. He did not practice with the team during the spring session. Those sanctions, once again, include a 1-game suspension for Puka versus the opener against Indiana State. He's also subject to probation until he graduates. Monthly meetings with the university conduct officer. He has to also complete 40 hours of community service and completion of a sexual violence accountability course through KU's Sexual Assault Prevention and Education Center. According to the release by KU, those university sanctions are in addition to his diversion agreement with the court, which, per the KU Athletics release, required Williams, quote, "undergo a domestic violence offender assessment, complete an anger management course, and fulfill 40 hours of community service," end quote. So the former Big 12 star will get a second chance at KU for first-year head coach Les Miles. This is what Miles had to say. Quote, "Puka has taken responsibility for his actions, and we are happy he is back with the team. The young man has learned much throughout this process, and we will support him as he continues working through the required educational and accountability steps." So Puka Williams will be playing for the Kansas Jayhawks this year. He's going to be returning to the team a bit under probation and having to be suspended for the opener. We'll see if the young man makes the most of his second chance. He has a coach that loves giving second chances. So we'll see if Puka takes advantage of it. That's going to do it for hour number two. Hour number three coming up after this break here on RP3 and Company, and we'll lead off with former Raging Cajun star Elford Payton joins us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me, thanks draft this year, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is a former John Arratt star who would go on to play for the Raging Cajuns men's basketball team, where he helped lead them to the NCAA tournament and was named Sunbelt Defensive Player of the Year. He was a lottery pick in 2014, and the 25-year-old just wrapped up a season playing for the New Orleans Pelicans, where he recorded five consecutive triple-doubles to tie a franchise mark. Just a few weeks ago, he signed a two-year, $16 million deal with the New York Knicks. It's time to welcome back to the show the one and only Elford Payton. Elford, how you doing this morning, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Doing great, doing great. Let's start off with, how good does it feel once free agency arrived that you were able to get a deal done within the first couple days and now you have your future locked up for at least the next 2 years? How good does that feel, man?
It felt good. It felt really good. It just all we're paying off. It's just a blessing. I'm excited.
Now, I know, Elford, you know, you told media members down for your kickball tournament down there in Gretna right before the start of free agency that you would have liked to come and be back with the New Orleans Pelicans, but you understand that it's a business and you understand that, you know, you have to make decisions for yourself and that the franchise does. But let's talk about your year in New Orleans. You did have to overcome some injuries that kind of sidelined you, but you had such a strong finish to the year, the five consecutive triple-doubles. What was it like being able to play for the Pels, man?
It was great. It was everything. Much more than I expected. I didn't really expect that to have much impact on me, being able to play in front of my family and friends, night in and night out. It was crazy. It was also my first time ever dealing with injury like that. So, to be able to be home and be with my family and support, I think made a big difference.
And what was that like for you, man? You're dealing with the injuries, and obviously you just want to be out on the court to help your team, to help your hometown team win. So how did you deal with that frustration for, like, the first time in your career with it came to injuries?
Yeah, it was tough. Like I said, I had never been hurt like that. I've never been hurt for that amount of time. I've never missed that many games in my life, period. So it was definitely something new, but my family was there to support me. I just try to keep myself motivated, knowing that I would be back out there soon, trying to pick up where I left off at.
We're on with Elford Payton, former Raging Cajun star, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Elford, walk me through it, man. NBA free agency, it just seems to be crazy. It just seems to be madness from afar. What is it like being the player and being involved in NBA free agency, where you have multiple teams trying to, you know, recruit you and trying to sign you? What was that like for you, man?
It's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking as well. You know, you have these teams want you to come, play for them, and it's like college all over again, just recruit guys and recruiting. But you have to, it's such a big decision because it sets up your next, your next free agency, your next decision. So you have to choose wisely. You got to look at rosters. Does the team fit you? You know what I'm saying? Luckily for me, I don't have any kids, so I don't have to worry about things like that. But guys who have kids have to worry about, like, putting their kids in school in this particular state, things like that. So many things, different factors that go into it. And all that. You know, do I fit into what this coach is doing? You know, what are their plans for me? It's a lot of different questions that you have to ask yourself during this time.
We're talking with former Raging Cajun star Elford Payton here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Elford, you decide to sign the two-year, $16 million deal to play for the New York Knicks. Why did you make that decision, and why do you feel like the Knicks is the right fit for you here in the next few years, man?
A couple things for me. Scott Perry, the GM over here, the guy that drafted me, so I'm always, it was comfortable with him. You know, somebody I trust. He's always been somebody that's been honest with me throughout my career, good or bad. He's always told me the truth, and I think that's one of the the best things in this league. If you have somebody in your corner that's going to be honest with you. that's what you can ask for. The coach, you know, I've heard a lot of great things about Fitz. You know, two players and kind of admired him from, you know, from afar. So I was excited about that. And then just the guys they had acquired, I was familiar with and, you know, liked their games. And I feel like their games can complement mine. And obviously Julius signed before me and he was texting me, you know, that kind of tells me that, you know, to make the move with him, you know what I'm saying? So just kind of familiarity with the pieces. And like I said, I looked at this roster. I feel like it's a roster that I could help. And they had players to compliment me.
Elver, talk a little bit about kind of being reunited with Julius Randle. You guys played extremely well together, both of you guys, your first year last year in New Orleans, and both of you guys played extremely well. Now you guys are going to be playing together in New York. How excited are you about that possibility, and why do you think you guys play so well together on the floor?
I'm excited. You know, a lot of people are calling us out, so that's exciting to be the underdog. I think that's kind of been my thing all my life. So I'm excited. And I like Julius because, you know, it's easy to play with. He can pass. He's somebody that can score. He's a man to double team down there. So that makes my job that much easier. He's a smart player, and you know, he's a competitor. He wants to win. Yeah, so I like going in the battle with people like that.
We're talking with Elford Payton, former Raging Cajun great, and currently who is a member of the New York Knicks here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Elford, tell me a little bit about Fizdale, his philosophy, and why do you think it's a good matchup for you and what you bring to the table at the point guard spot?
He seems to be like a player's coach, and you know, he talks a lot about, you know, defense and being defensive-minded when we sat down, so I'm all about that. It's exciting.
So you feel, have they told you, is it going to be basically an open competition on who's going to be the starting point guard? Is that what conversations that you had with Coach Fizdale so far?
Yeah, pretty much open. You know, just battle it out, see what happens.
Elford, what about the young man that the Knicks took number 3 overall out of Duke, R.J. Barrett? He has a huge ceiling, a lot of buzz about him, obviously, there in New York City. What have you seen from him so far from afar, man? And have you reached out to him since the beginning of free agency?
I see a lot of talent, a lot of potential. You know, a guy can play. Obviously, anybody drafted there high has a huge ceiling. You know, I'm excited to play alongside him. I haven't been able to talk to him just yet, but looking forward to learning his game and getting to know him as a person and trying to get as much as possible out of him.
We're talking with former Raging Cajun great Elford Payton here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Elford, you've been around, you know, in the league quite a while now. I mean, you were a lottery pick in 2014, and then that first year you were named to the NBA All-Rookie first team as a member of the Orlando Magic. You know, how many times have you been able to play inside Madison Square Garden, and is it different? Everyone says it's different, that it's the mecca of basketball. Is it different playing inside the Garden?
I played in the Garden a bunch of times, and yeah, it's definitely different. You can just feel the energy in there. When you're on that court, just the crowd, obviously the fans, it's just different. It's just a different feeling. It's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of got to be there.
And Elford, are you ready, man, to deal with probably one of the most passionate fan bases in all of the association? Those Knicks fans, man, they can get unruly, man. You ready for the passionate fan base there of the Knicks?
Yeah. You know, I think they respect players that play hard and give it their all, and I think I think of myself as one of those guys, so I'm not worried at all.
Well, wrapping up our conversation here with former Raging Cajun great Elford Payton on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Elford, so free agency, you know, you're locked in. You've met with your coach. You know, you've been communicating with Julius. So what's the game plan now, between now and the start of the season and the start of when you guys are going to be reporting for camp? What are you going to be doing to get yourself into the best shape possible for the upcoming season?
Just continuing to train like I always do every summer. It's no different. Continue to try and push myself to the limit. as much as possible. I push myself to exhaustion every day, and I make sure I'm recovering. It's no different than any other season.
Well, Elford, congratulations on getting the two-year contract with the New York Knicks, and best of luck to you guys moving forward, and we'll be in touch soon, man.
All right, thank you.
That's Elford Payton, former Raging Cajun great and lottery pick, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Start off this hour with a terrific conversation with former Raging Cajun star, Defensive Player of the Year, lottery pick, Elford Payton. Friend of the show, seems to be very excited about his opportunity to play in the Mecca of basketball, Madison Square Garden, as he signed that two-year deal with the New York Knicks. We appreciate Elford making some time for us. I will be interested to see how Elford matches up again with Julius Randle there in New York and how they play with R.J. Barrett. I'm intrigued. The Knicks intrigue me. They're typically messy, but you get two stand-up players, good locker room guys, and good players like Elford Payton and Julius Randle. Maybe they can help turn things around, so to speak, there in New York City for the Knicks. But I want to come back to the Home Run Derby. Historic night last night as your boys pick. Hold on, wait. That's right. The New York Mets. The Metropolitan Home Run Derby participant. Alonzo, the Rook, goes out there and wins the whole thing. And he did so stealthy. He barely gets out of the first round, right? Barely, by one home run. Barely gets out of the semifinals, beating my guy, Ronald Acuna Jr. from the Atlanta Braves. Gets to the finals and just needed one more home run than Vlad Guerrero Jr., who put on a show, record-setting night. 29 home runs in round number one, and then he said, okay, I'll do it again for good measure. In case you were away from your television for the first round epic performance by Vlad Guerrero Jr., he said, I got you covered. Not to worry. No need to rewind the tape. I'll just hit another 29 home runs in round number two. But it wasn't enough. Even though he hit 20-plus home runs in the finale, Alonzo hit one more to edge out. Alonzo is the winner of the Home Run Derby, even though he had the third most home runs on the night, total. The third. And he still won the whole thing because it's a bracket. It's not necessarily who's the best home run hitter. It's not necessarily who's the best Home Run Derby hitter. It's whoever is the last man standing. Cody and I discussed this. Do we think it should be tweaked? Do you think whoever hits the most home runs should be the Home Run Derby champion instead of the bracket format that they have? And part of me does like the bracket format, right? It does like the tournament style. Guys facing off, being eliminated, survive in advance. I get it. But 3 years, 4 years, 6 years down the road, when we look back at this Home Run Derby, we're going to go, oh, yeah, Vlad Guerrero Jr., yeah, he had all those home runs. He was the man. He won that thing. And then you'll have to do your search on your phone and go, no, in fact, he did not. The guy who hit the third most home runs is the one who actually won the whole thing. Cody.
I can see the trivia question now. Pete Alonso won the 2019 Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. But who hit the most home runs? And then you'll be like, well, Pete Alonso, and you would be wrong.
you would, in fact, be inaccurate. That'd be inaccurate.
Cody, let's circle back. Your thoughts. Do you think they should tweak the format? Should it just be – you had mentioned earlier on today's show that you would like to see them do that first round where everyone gets a chance to go up
right,
there.
No matchups.
No matchups.
No you versus you. Just everyone get an at-bat. Everyone go to the plate. You get your 10 outs, and you see how many home runs you can hit in your 10 outs. And then you take the top two guys from that first round, and then you move them on into the finals. You give them 10 more outs, and you don't reset their home runs. If the top two guys from that first round have 30 and 29 home runs each, then when they start the finals, one guy is one home run ahead already when they start the final. I don't even really care, and this is exactly what I said earlier. I don't care, really and truthfully, even if they keep the matchups. If they want to keep the bracket style and the seedings and that way, that's fine. Just don't reset the home runs. That's my major point, is if Vlad Guerrero Jr. hits 29 home runs, then in the next round he should start with 29 home runs. It's just that's my take on it. It's a home run derby. It's not a, you know, home run by rounds. And in boxing, the score doesn't reset after each. I mean, it does. The round score does, but they don't go back of the total score. They don't take that back to zero. So even if you wanted to reset the score back to zero for each round, then there still needs to be a cumulative or a total score for each guy that will then determine the actual champion. That's just my thoughts.
I don't mind that because it's very much comes off like, well, if you don't, you know, if you work in a corporate atmosphere, well, you better use that vacation. If you don't, you lose it. You know, and then you got to, and then it all resets and you don't have any carryover. We're going to remember the show that Vlad Guerrero Jr. gave us last night. That's what we remember of everything. Look, I'm a Braves fan, so I'm going to rep Acuña and as I should, right? And he had a heck of a performance. But we're going to remember Vlad Guerrero putting on a show. We're going to remember the triple tiebreaker in the semifinals between him and Peterson from the Dodgers. Okay? We're going to remember that. People are probably going to think, going to remember, and it won't take long because people forget. Cody, they'll remember that. They'll think that was the finals.
It's like that Jordan shot. Was it actually in game six and the Bulls had to come out and still
right.
win game, but everyone just assumes that shot won the championship?
Right. That was game seven. I don't know. I will be interested to see how things are. You know what? Let's make it our new poll question. First of all, Cody, let's tell the people what yesterday's poll question was. What was the final tally on that before we put up the new one? If you can, please.
Yeah.
But the new poll question, while Cody gets that information, the new poll question will be, do you feel that the home run should be carried over from round to round in the home run derby?
Yeah, should home runs carry over from each round? And yeah,
correct.
Exactly. Yesterday, we just asked you if the home run derby mattered to you, and that can mean anything. Does it matter because it's fun? Does it matter because you like it? Or does it not matter for whatever reason? The results are in, and I don't know if this is surprising or not, but 37.5% say the home run derby does matter, while 62.5% say that it doesn't matter. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's interesting or not. But more people are saying, yeah, the home run derby is kind of whatever, than are saying, like, yeah, it's cool. I like it. It matters.
I love it. I know it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. I mean, the winner
does
get...
Does it matter to you? It was the question.
But it does matter to me.
To you, it does.
Yes. And it matters to... I bet it matters to Mr. Alonso, who got a $1 million payday and a big trophy.
Right. Very important.
Just saying, especially with his base salary being $500,000 for the year. So he just doubled his salary by essentially hitting batting practice.
So that new poll
question. How great is that?
That'll be up there soon. Go give that a click. You can find it where, Raymond?
On 1037thegame.com. It's on our homepage. Just look to the right on the bottom. You'll find it there. Make sure to vote on our poll question. And if you haven't, there's the sync or swim question for Bumper to Bumper Sports. It's also on our homepage as well. That's where you find our poll questions right there on 1037thegame.com. So make sure to go vote on the new one. Do you feel that homers in the Home Run Derby should be carried over from round to round? I say yes. Cody?
Yes, absolutely. Duh. To me.
I like duh. It's yeah. It's duh, Raymond. It's duh.
That's how if you want to say that no, they shouldn't carry over, and you can use strategy to you know, maybe not waste all of your energy in those first rounds to save some for the final rounds, but strategy is not why we watch the Home Run Derby. We watch the Home Run Derby to watch dudes mash the baseball to hit a little round ball as far as they can with a wooden stick. That's why we tune into the Home Run Derby, not to watch guys methodically pick their way through the Home Run Derby by, if I hit 17 home runs here, it's going to reset, so I'll be fine and we can move. Like, that's not why we watch it.
Do you know, I think in Japan, though, they have a bunting contest?
Sounds right.
Right? And they have, like, these circles inside of circles on the field.
It's like a bull's, like a game of darts.
Right, like a game of darts. And they actually have a bunting contest. And the ball has to roll right in there. It's like, roll right in there.
Oh. In America, we call that golf.
Oh, nice. Bravo. Bravo, sir. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll catch up with our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He'll be joining us right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We had a tremendous show so far, talking a lot of New Orleans Pelicans. We've talked NBA Summer League out in Vegas. We discussed the Home Run Derby as well. Of course, we took time out to talk about Tony Robichaux, his legacy as he was laid to rest yesterday. And we also caught up with Elford Payton, former Raging Cajun hoop star, who's now preparing for life as a member of the New York Knicks. But we're going to close out today's show talking a little Saints. That's right. It's time for some Hoodat talk, and there's no one better for us to join us to do just that than our good friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good, Raymond. I finally got my tone down straight I appreciate you having me on, and speaking of dates, today marks 1 month away from the Saints preseason opener and exactly 2 months away from the regular season opener. So we're coming up on it now. We've been talking a lot this offseason, but I feel like we're finally closing in with training camp coming later this month. We've got some Saints football right around the corner.
Yeah, training camp's going to be starting right around the corner. Like you said, preseason's going to be in a month, so things are going to get ratcheted up very quickly. Right now is still kind of a dead period, so to speak, but you have all these preseason rankings, or, you know, where players rank by other players. The NFL.com does their countdown, as well as the NFL Network. And we all know that the Saints offense goes as far as Drew Brees is going to take them, right? He's the most indispensable player in the Saints offense. But if something did happen, they could turn to Teddy Bridgewater, or at least hopefully they could, the former Pro Bowl quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. For you, though, Andrew, who's the most indispensable player not named Drew Brees on the roster? Because NFL.com released it out, and they basically said it's Michael Thomas as the number eight. He makes the top 10 list. He comes in at number eight.
Well, I think it's interesting. Even a couple of years ago, I would have said that it's Drew Brees, no question. But I think it bears asking that question now. Is Drew Brees still the most indispensable player on this team? And I think the answer is yes. But you know, when you look at the defensive side of the ball and just how consistent Cameron Jordan has been, we take that for granted a little bit. And, you know, when you think about how Sheldon Rankin is gone and probably not going to be available for at least the first quarter of the season, maybe longer, then you realize, I think, how valuable Cam Jordan is and how much the Saints need him to continue being that steady force that's just so good against the run, so good against the pass. I mean, and any play call, any down and distance, that's really hard to replace. And I really think when you consider his versatility, Cam Jordan is maybe the best defensive end in the league. So, you know, I would certainly put him in the mix. You mentioned Michael Thomas. I think with the departure of Mark Ingram, you know, Alvin Kamara is certainly worthy of being in that discussion as well. So, you know, those three guys to me stand out, and I think are certainly in the conversation with Drew Brees. You know, you mentioned Bridgewater. So, you know, I think the thing about quarterback now, when you have Sean Payton calling the plays, scheming, developing the game plan, I don't think it only falls on Teddy Bridgewater. If something were to happen to Drew Brees, I think it would be a combination of Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. I think Payton knows how to use Taysom Hill's skill set. Maybe he ramps that up a little bit if Brees wasn't on the field. But I think he would be able to maybe create a game plan to make Bridgewater's job a little bit easier, knowing that he's got Taysom Hill and can use his skills and put them to good use as well. So, you know, I'm not ready to say this team is a playoff team without Drew Brees, but I'm certain they could go into an NFL game and be competitive. And I don't throw that out lightly, because I do realize how critical Brees is. Not only from a performance standpoint, but just with his mind and his preparation and everything that goes into getting ready for an NFL game. He's certainly still the best option at quarterback, but I think this team is more set up to absorb his injury or his departure than it's ever been in the past. So I think that's promising, and certainly, you know, as he gets older, we start to question, is he the most valuable piece to this team?
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast, and this is NFL.com's most indispensable players, both for offense and defense. They did essentially a top 10. Now, the list does exclude quarterbacks, and they did that on purpose, obviously, that they excluded the quarterbacks and they wanted to know best offensive indispensable players. And that does include linemen as well. Wide receivers, running backs, tight ends, the whole nine yards, just not quarterbacks. So, to be clear, and like Andrew pointed out, you know, Drew Brees is the man, but this list is not including quarterbacks on the offensive side. That's what NFL.com did decide. So it was the most indispensable players that aren't quarterbacks. My question to you, Andrew, a follow-up is it Michael Thomas if it's not Drew Brees, or should it be Alvin Kamara?
Yeah, that's the question. I think with Mark Ingram leaving this team, and, you know, Latavius Murray is going to be his replacement, and we'll wait to see how productive he can be. But I think in some ways Alvin Kamara is maybe more significant to this offense. When you consider what he does in the passing game, you know, it's one of those things where I think Kamara, potentially you rate him maybe a little bit higher than Michael Thomas because of just how dynamic he is. Obviously, defense isn't game plan for Michael Thomas, and pay attention to where he is on the field. But when you consider what Alvin Kamara does, he's multifaceted, whether it's the run game, the passing game, or, you know, being lined up in the slot, being lined up in the backfield. He's a little bit more versatile, and he's a little bit more explosive. So I would maybe say Kamara.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the Artco Equipment Hotline. Andrew, one of the biggest position battles heading into training camp here in a few weeks has to be at wide receiver. We know Michael Thomas is the guy. They're going to rework his deal. They're going to give him that big contract extension and try to make him the highest paid wide receiver in the game. That's going to happen probably right before the start of training camp or during camp. We know they like Ted Ginn Jr. He's the veteran slot guy. We know that. You got Jared Cook at tight end. But the other wide receiver spots, it seems to be wide open. Is it going to be second-year guy Tre'Quan Smith out of UCF? Is it going to be Cameron Meredith finally being healthy, coming over from the Chicago Bears when they signed him as a restricted free agent? Is it going to be possibly Kirkwood, the young man out of Temple, as an undrafted rookie free agent? Where do you see the real kind of dogfights happening at the wide receiver spot?
Well, you mentioned three guys that I think are absolutely in the mix. You know, Ted Ginn is, you know, on the wrong side of 30, and so he's aging quickly, but he's still a productive NFL player. And Austin Carr is a guy that I think Sean Payton likes a lot, that has some slot ability. So there's a lot of guys there, and I think it's difficult at this point. We really don't know. The good news is there's a lot of guys, so there's a lot of bodies that are capable, and it's up to somebody to emerge. And in the past, whether it's been Kenny Stills or Willie Snead or Lance Moore, there have been receivers in this offense that have risen to the occasion and surprised, despite the fact that they maybe weren't household names coming in. So we'll wait and see who that's going to be, but I think that's maybe the blessing and curse of the way this receiver roster is constructed right now. We don't really know, after Michael Thomas, what this looks like. There's a lot of opportunities for a lot of capable players, but someone's going to have to emerge, because at this point, the reps and the catches are up for grabs.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. What's the likelihood that former track and field star, the 25-year-old Cyril Grayson, former All-American at LSU, who the Saints signed away from the Seahawks, what's the likelihood that this cat could make the roster and be a contributor?
I think it's a long shot, to be honest. You know, he just really hasn't played enough football or really put enough tape together to really show that he's a guy that can do it consistently. So I think first and foremost, if he can show in preseason that he's explosive in the return game, that's his path to the roster. I don't think as a receiver he makes his team. At least not right now. But if he can show something in the return game, maybe return a kickoff or a punt for a touchdown, then I think the Saints' decision on whether or not to keep him becomes a little bit more difficult. So I think first and foremost, he needs to show something there. Now, he is, by all accounts, the fastest player on the team. You can't replace speed. And so that's a skill and a talent that he has that maybe separates him from some other players on the roster. And so I do think he's a good candidate this year for the practice squad. Now he's going to have to show some promise at receiver and show the ability to develop a little bit. But the Saints will maybe stash a player for a year or two, but NFL teams are impatient about a guy developing. So he's going to have to show improvement pretty quickly here. But if he does, I think he's got a good shot at the practice squad this year.
Talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I want to keep the talk about wide receiver going, Andrew, because that's the one that intrigues me the most. I feel they like what they got out of Kirkwood last year, out of Temple. I think they're high on Tre'Quan Smith, even though he was up and down. Rookie wide receivers tend to do that. It's hard for them to make the transition to the next level. So I think they like Smith. I think they like Kirkwood. I think those guys have roster spots. I think they still like Ted Ginn Jr. as the veteran guy, even though he only played five games last year. I think that final kind of starter role or guy that's part of the package of four or five wide is going to come down between Cameron Meredith coming off another injury-plagued season and the vet that they signed in June that's kind of gone under the radar, and that's Rishard Matthews. That's a guy that's caught at least 40 balls in the last 3 years and has showed great flashes in the past. Do you agree with that? Do you think it comes down to Matthews versus Meredith?
Yeah, I think so. I firmly believe that Cam Meredith it absolutely is not only making this team, but has a significant role and is a starter on this team if he's healthy. He was a star in this league, and if you look at his tape with the Bears, he was a phenomenal player before his injury. So really the question is, can he get his knee right and can he play? Now, having said all that, I think the odds are stacked against him, if I'm being honest. I think he has failed to show that he's recovered from that knee injury, and we know how significant it was. So I think he's got a long climb back to become the player that he once was, and he may never. So that's going to be the challenge. I think if he can kind of regain his glory, I don't think there's anyone on this roster that has his talent, with the exception of Michael Thomas, of course. But if he can't regain that, then I think it's an easy path to the roster for Rishard Matthews. So I do agree with that. And that's not to discount Austin Carr. Listen, he's a guy that always seems to surprise.
surprised. I personally have never really seen him do enough on the field to get me excited about the player. But I know Sean Payton loves the guy. And I know Sean Payton believes he's the guy that can really develop into a promising slot receiver. So, you know, I wouldn't discount Austin Carr. I think at this point he's got to show something this year or never. But beyond that, I agree with you. I think if Cam Meredith's healthy, the job is his. If not, I think Rishard Matthews is perfectly positioned to make this team and contribute.
We're wrapping up with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, one final question to get you out here. I'm sure you've seen the new fancy, sensational mustache that Cam Jordan is rocking in his official Saints photo. He looks like an old cartoon villain. What can we do to ensure that you could honor the leader of the Saints defense by growing your own fancy mustache? What can we do to make that happen?
Yeah, he's got the whole Johnny Depp Pirates of the Caribbean thing going. It's impressive. You know, I'll be honest, Raymond, I can go a week without shaving. It doesn't look like much has grown. So I personally am not one of those guys that could come anywhere close to doing something like that justice. So
you can't. So you're bowing. Look, it's okay. Cam was inspired apparently by Captain Hook. For whatever reason, Cam Jordan spending time watching Captain Hook. So you can't grow the mustache, but you know what, Cam? You know Cam's going to grow it just for you and him both. How about that?
I got to bow out on this one, yeah, and I got to leave this to the men.
Andrew, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
That's Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast joining us via the ARCO Equipment Hotline.
Yeah, I saw that picture yesterday.
Picture's great.
And he's doing the bug eyes, too. He's got his eyes really wide open, like so he's not staring in. He's like he's looking through you. But, yeah, I believe it was on Cam Jordan's Instagram or might have been on his Twitter. I can't remember exactly. He put out yesterday that his NFL picture was inspired by Captain Hook. Like you said, Ray, not sure why Cam Jordan is infatuated with Captain Hook right now, but there you go. We're hoping that he makes all the NFL quarterbacks his Mr. Smead this season.
Oh, nice. My man's enjoying himself. My man's enjoying life.
You got to have fun.
And he seems to be having a ton of it. So, yeah, if you haven't checked it out, make sure to do so. We got to hit a break. We will wrap up this edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game at Katie Ennis Sports Station after this. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game at Katie Ennis Sports Station. Tremendous show. I want to take a moment to thank our guest, Tim Buckley from the Daily Advertiser, helping us put into better perspective the legacy of Tony Robichaux, who was laid to rest yesterday in Crowley, the longtime Raging Cajun baseball coach. Also want to take a moment to thank Elford Payton, former Raging Cajun basketball star, for joining us, giving his thoughts on his new career path with the New York Knicks. He last year played for the New Orleans Pelicans. Now he's moving on to play for the Knicks, signing a 2-year deal. He seems excited about that, and we wish him nothing but the best of luck and thank him for taking some time out during the summer as he prepares for the next NBA season. And, of course, we want to thank our good friend Andrew Juge, who just joined us in the last segment from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's quiet right now for the Saints, if you don't count the great Captain Hook mustache by Cam Jordan. It's quiet, but we talked definitely about the big position battle heading into camp for the New Orleans Saints has to be wide receiver. It is going to be physical. It's going to be a dogfight during training camp down there in Metairie at the training complex. You can also take a moment, if you'd like, go to the 103.7 The Game website, 103.7thegame.com. You'll see our latest poll question. In the home run derby, should home runs, the dingers, should they carry over from round to round? Me and Cody say yes.
Just a couple of votes in so far on this early return, but 100% are saying yes as well.
And those people are correct, and they should feel good about themselves. But make sure to vote throughout the day. Just go to 1037thegame.com. You can find our poll question on the right hand of the homepage. Coming up today, Tuesday, July the 9th, we got Chip Shots with Rob Spires coming up next, our weekly golf show, then followed by Dan Patrick and the Jim Rome show. But then at 2 o'clock, it'll be Uncle Jordy with the Jordy Holtberg show from 2 to 4. The good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, will be on from 4 to 6. And then he's going to lead you into Tiger Rag Radio live from 6 to 8. So make sure just to keep it dialed in right here the rest of the day. Cody Schutz, tremendous job as always, my friend. Appreciate everyone out there listening. We'll do it all again tomorrow, hopefully even bigger and better. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.